Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 171 of Unblocking Crypto. Hal, holy cow, a very interesting week, which is becoming the norm again with crypto. It's a lot of stuff going on every week.
It does feel like bull market-ish, like bull market light, with a lot of things happening every week. So yeah, let's jump in.
Yeah, well, so last week we talked about a state or two not doing this Bitcoin reserve, Arizona being one of those. Well, shortly after that, New Hampshire signed the first strategic Bitcoin reserve bill. So it allows them to buy up to 10% in really Bitcoin, because that's the only one that meets their criteria, but they can either do that in actual Bitcoins or in ETFs. And I'll be intrigued to see how quickly that happens, but it is really exciting to see. Arizona did kind of follow the next day almost with their announcement, and all that it does is they call it a strategic Bitcoin reserve, but it is really a reserve fund for unclaimed virtual assets, and those can be tapped for future use pending some sort of legislation approval, which kind of sucks because the week before they vetoed the exact same thing, although that it would allow up to 10% of that to be invested in 10% of their funds to be invested in Bitcoin. So it's a Bitcoin, strategic Bitcoin bill-ish, but not really the main one that everybody's looking for.
Yeah, the New Hampshire one to me is what they should look like. 10% max. I mean, as you're getting jumping off point, you know, that if you talk to somebody who's curious about Bitcoin, what about this, what about that, and they start to get into it and understand it, I wouldn't be like, yeah, 10%. Go ahead and readjust your net worth so that 10% is in Bitcoin. I mean, that's a huge ask, you know? So, you know, to ask a state to do that's a big deal. So I think the New Hampshire one's fine. They can do 1%, 5%, 10%, cool. And the Arizona one is, I feel like it's strategic Bitcoin reserve for weenies. Like, hey, if you have these frozen assets, really like unclaimed assets or assets that you've confiscated, then here's a title you can put on them so that you don't have to sell them, which is like the least you could do, right? I mean, hey, state, you have free money. Here's a way to not lose it. Now, that's to me, that's super easy. So here's the deal, man. And we talk about this a lot. All you need is like that first little step. One state makes a step. El Salvador, tiny country, you know, 20 million people, or maybe 6 million people, whatever. Small little step. Bhutan, small step. You know, without those, you don't get the United States, right? So that's the same thing on these states. You know, you're not going to get Florida and California right out of the gate. So you get New Hampshire. Cool. This is, you know, this is what adoption looks like, you know, one or two at a time. And then 18 months or 4 years from now, we're going to see six states at the same time, you know, all approve a pretty legit strategic Bitcoin reserve bill. So these are the things that have to happen in order to get off the ground. And the states are now off of zero. So that's good.
Well, New Hampshire's motto is live free or die, right? So it kind of fits very well in with the Bitcoin mantra. Texas and North Carolina seem to be very close behind in terms of their own strategic Bitcoin reserve bills too. So that will be intriguing. In addition to that, some really interesting state news. Missouri axed their capital gains tax on Bitcoin, which is kind of interesting, right? So that's exciting to see. I mean, I guess there's still the federal taxes you got to pay, but from a state tax perspective, I wonder what that does from a Missouri perspective in terms of Bitcoiners wanting to move there. And then Oregon also recognized digital assets like Bitcoin as collateral for securing funding. So that's kind of a big deal too. And we'll talk about what Strike is doing here in a little bit, but that's exciting to see that states are actually acknowledging that Bitcoin and crypto is real and here to stay.
Oh yeah. I mean, you're talking in 1 week, we have something to talk about in four different states. And we may have mentioned Missouri a little bit throughout the last 3 years, but not a lot. But I'm all for it, man. I think capital gains during an inflationary period, capital gains are very difficult to pay. So they're not indexed to inflation. So your cost basis, if you buy something 4 years ago and it doubled, you're paying tax on half of what, if you sell the whole thing, you're paying tax on half of it, but your purchasing power may be break even. So you're going from real gains to real losses because you have to pay taxes. And I think it's crap. So I'm all for anybody that wants to take a crack at attacking capital gains tax, as I feel like it's outdated for where we are, and they need to index it to CPI or something, because I think that it's a garbage tax.
Yeah, I can't say I disagree with you there. So let's talk about strike real quick. So that's a pretty exciting news too. Strike is introducing their lending product. It is going to be, I think a 12% APR is where it starts. It allows you to get anywhere from about $75,000 minimum up to about $2 million using your Bitcoin. I didn't really read what the maximum loan to value was, but I want to say when I saw it come through the app, it was 20 or 30%, something like that, right? So it's pretty low. It's theoretically shouldn't be called. What's interesting is they're not reporting this to the credit agencies, and it does not affect your credit scores. So if you have it, it's there. It doesn't matter who you are or what you are or what you're doing with it, as long as you have the Bitcoin to kind of back it up. So really exciting to see what's going on there. And I'm intrigued to see if a lot of other companies start to pick this up. I know the CEO of Strike is now going to be the CEO of 21. Does this mean that Strategy tries to do a similar type of product as well in the future, since they're becoming this Bitcoin treasury company as well? But exciting to see this kind of coming back into the market.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how this goes, because anyone else I don't think I would trust. But Jack Mallers is as transparent as any CEO of any company I've ever seen. I mean, a lot of people were talking about, well, if I get a loan against my Bitcoin, are you going to rehypothecate my Bitcoin, right? Or what are you doing with it? And he came out and said, no, it's basically being put in escrow and being held. We're not playing any tricky games like 3 Arrows Capital and BlockFi and all those, you know, companies that crashed did. Like, I mean, he's paid attention and he's not going to make those mistakes. And he also knows Bitcoin's CAGR can be 20 to 60%. So if you start to play games with the Bitcoin on the backside, and you might get beat, ripped apart on a tear up or down. And so I think it makes sense, as long as they do it right on the backside. And like you said, the collateral's there, right? If you're holding the Bitcoin. So if they can verify that that's real Bitcoin, they don't need to send out an appraiser to look at a house to figure out how much it's worth. It's like, bang, this is it's super easy to see what your Bitcoin is worth. And if you want to get you want to throw two Bitcoin down to get three Bitcoin down to get a $75,000 loan, great. And then I think they give you a chance. If Bitcoin's price crashes, they give you a pretty decent period of time, like at least a week, to bolster your position so that you don't get liquidated. So it's pretty fair on both sides. But honestly, at this point, I feel pretty good saying that a 75% drop in Bitcoin price is going to be unlikely. If we get a 75% drop in Bitcoin price, we're going to have either rocketed price up to set it up, or everything went wrong across all asset classes and we're in trouble. So I feel pretty good about it. I like it that with all of the yield bearing with all of the like MSTY products out there that can produce yield or produce, it's a dividend based on the sale of options, covered calls. With all of those things that are out there, or just getting a hold of some Bitcoin and basically getting a loan to buy Bitcoin using your Bitcoin, 12% is not great, but if you do it over a couple of years, you should beat it with Bitcoin. I mean, Bitcoin of a CAGR of 12% would be that would be a pretty bad year for Bitcoin. So I like it. It'd be great to see somebody try it and succeed, because you've got these Bitcoin treasury companies that are going to do something with the Bitcoin. And up until now, very few companies have been able to play lending games with Bitcoin without it blowing them up. So if Strike can do it, then maybe it'll open the door to have some ideas to figure out some ways to build businesses around Bitcoin treasuries and basically monetize some of the Bitcoin so that these companies are generating revenue off of Bitcoin rather than watching the price of Bitcoin dictate their, you know, their revenue or not revenue, but dictate their earnings every quarter.
Yeah, and 12% isn't too far off from what you can get from TradFi for a lot of these personal loans anyways, although a lot of those are probably non-collateralized. So it's a starting point. I think as things progress, we'll start to see it get more commoditized and the rates will come down. But it's still early for a lot of these people, and they're trying to figure out how they can do this and make sure it all works. So I don't know. We're just coming off of Celsius. Their CEO just got sentenced to 12 years for crypto-related fraud, which they had done lending and things like that with Bitcoin a few years ago. So, I mean, I think there's still a lot of hesitation from a lot of people to want to try this out. So start it, see where it goes, and let's see what the future brings.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's a lot of people. I had lunch with a Bitcoin guy here in town, and there just seems to be a sentiment shift for people who've been in Bitcoin a long time. Now that Bitcoin's, you know, I mean, it kind of lives in this $90,000 to $110,000 range. So from a dollar standpoint, people are like, man, you know, you're sitting on quite a bit of value in Bitcoin now. You've had it for 6-7 years and it's worth something. Now you kind of want to put it to work, right? I mean, that's we're all trained to put money to work. And if it just sits there, then that's not a good thing. Bitcoin's money. So you just have this valuable piece sitting there. If you can put it to work a little bit, even at 12%, basically the challenge is go beat 12%. And you don't actually have to do that, because the Bitcoin that you hold should be growing by greater than 12% based on everything that I believe. So it makes a lot of sense to me for people to start to do this instead of continuing to work their butts off so that they can buy more Bitcoin at $100,000 when they're, you know, they've got Bitcoin that's they bought for $10,000 or $5,000 or whatever. So it's tough to keep buying Bitcoin. And you know, at this point, you're right. Okay, 6, 7, 8 years ago, you thought you were right, and now you're kind of being proven right. So now what are you going to do with it? And so I think finding ways to activate Bitcoin to be valuable on a day-to-day basis instead of a wait for some future date to spend Bitcoin basis, it makes a lot of sense to me.
Well, I was looking at some of the news, and with the Celsius CEO getting 12 years of jail time, it was interesting. There was a guy in Virginia that apparently collected about $185,000, sent it via crypto to Turkey, I think it was, and ended up funding ISIS. He got 30 years of jail time. So I guess there's still different levels of what you can do and what type of fraud means.
Yeah, I mean, you can put that on the list of like the Democrats putting crypto in with money laundering and terrorism and all that stuff. It's like, yeah, you know, if that guy delivered $150,000 in cash to ISIS, you probably wouldn't be able to catch him. So yeah. This, you know, you're talking about there's one more person funding terrorism that you don't have to worry about. I didn't hear about that story. So I'm assuming that there's a direct connection and not some like, well, you sent it to Turkey, this guy in Turkey sent it to this person and that person, and then, you know, some percentage of it landed in a wallet that's red flagged. I don't know that story, but I mean, if you're funding ISIS, yeah, you should probably go to jail. I don't know how long you should go to jail for. I've never put any thought to that.
Well, apparently it's not a number value, because if you're Celsius and you steal umpteen billion dollars, it's not as bad as funding terrorism for $185,000.
Right. No, I don't know. These white collar crime dudes, I mean, they never really get the sentences that other people get. It's it's always like just easier. I don't know. I think it's the danger to society piece, whatever. This is way outside of my lane, but yeah, you're wrecking people's lives. Is that better or worse than wrecking people's lives in a different way? I don't know.
So you mentioned the Democrats earlier. I guess it's probably a good idea to bring up the Genius Act, which is their stablecoin bill that was in the Senate and went up for vote and failed to advance. I mean, it was pretty much like 48-49 or 49-48, depending on where you read this. It sounds like there were about 9 Democrats that pulled their support last minute. There are also 3 Republicans that pulled their support. So, I mean, one, when you hear this, you're like, okay, the stablecoin bill theoretically was the simple one. There is a market structure bill that's supposed to be coming behind that. And if they can't agree on the stablecoin piece, how are they ever going to agree on the market structure bill? So does this mean things are way off? I know I was reading Bitwise's CIO, Matt Hugin. He is worried that Congress is going to fumble the ball on the 1-yard line with this, which it's kind of wild right now what's happening. But I think even Scott Bessent was very bullish on believing that the United States should be the premier destination for digital assets, and that with what's going on with the stablecoin bill, he said American leadership is needed for stablecoins and other digital assets to thrive globally. And he just lambasted the Senate for a missed opportunity here. So I don't know. I'll be interested to see where things go. It definitely can't be brought back up, but there's apparently some issues there. And I think some of which is Elizabeth Warren wanting big tech to stay out of stablecoins and for only the banks to be able to handle this. And I think she specifically targeted Meta for what they were looking at doing with is enabling stablecoins to reduce their cost of payouts. But she's saying big tech is a problem. And I kind of laughed and said, well, the banks have been a problem for a long time. How are we going to rely on them to do everything when they've screwed everything up every time they're given something and we have to continue to bail them out? So I don't know. It's kind of wild.
Yeah. To me, this has the banking lobby put the right money in the right pockets to get this thing flipped, because you had 4 Democrats who voted for it in the banking committee, including Gillibrand, a co-sponsor who's been really involved in a lot of the crypto stuff for years now. And guess what? Guess who flipped? Gillibrand. Co-sponsored the bill, has been walking it through committee, doing all the work, and then enough money hits that account and votes against their own bill. It's when it doesn't make sense, there's probably money involved. There's probably money involved here. The excuses are thin, like this may help the Trump family, and there's not enough AML, like anti-money laundering type of stuff built in there and all that. It's like, there's never enough, right? That to me is not an excuse. You can't anti-money launder enough in a bill. You got to get it out there, and then they know what they're going to do. We got to pass a law to close this little loophole here or there. It's just trash. Congress is trash. Like, it's been like that forever. Unless it's an omnibus bill and they're up against a government shutdown and freeze and all that, they don't pass anything. So this to me is the fumbling the ball on the 1-yard line. This is an easy one to pass. Yeah, the more I look at it and think about it, the more stable coins make sense. They're running out of time. I'll tell you that. Like, we got basically a year to get stuff passed before it really becomes campaign season for the midterm. So not thrilled the way they did this, but Congress can't get things done. So it's normal, but it would have been nice to see it happen.
Yeah, it was interesting. So I think Citibank just came out with a report that their belief is that stablecoins will grow to about $1.6 trillion in the next 5 years, although they have an even more bullish prediction that it's going to be $3.7 trillion. If you look at where it's at today, it's $240 billion. So there's a huge growth over the next 5 years, and that's going to go somewhere. This whole concept of trying to bring the innovation of crypto and make the U.S. the crypto capital of the world, we need some sort of regulation in place so that people will build. And yeah, it seems like a no-brainer, but as usual, nothing's happening.
Yeah, it's tough to be no-brainer enough to get something through Congress.
Yeah. All right. Well, at the same time, BlackRock is actually meeting with the SEC to talk about staking and options on crypto ETFs, which would be interesting to see. I mean, we've kind of talked about this happening, and if this does happen, I mean, it's already kind of there for Bitcoin, but if you allow it for Ethereum, then maybe this helps out with the Ethereum story. Ethereum had a great jump here in the past week with their new Pectra upgrade, but it's still got a ways to go before it's considered anywhere near the same level as Bitcoin.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. This story's not on my list, but we can just keep going. I mean, I was ticked off about the genius bill. Like, while you were talking, I was like continuing to have thoughts about it. It's super frustrating. Yeah. You know, everybody got elected based on pro crypto stance, and they have a softball and they blow it. So sorry, I checked out there for a second.
Yeah, well, let's go on to something more exciting. And Coinbase was all over the news last week. They had things going left and right. They announced that they're going to do 24/7 trading for Bitcoin futures. This is now the first time that leveraged futures contracts on these digital assets will be available around the clock on a CFTC regulated exchange. So that's a big deal. Really exciting to see there. A day later, maybe, they announced their intent to buy Deribit, which is a crypto options giant. A total price was $2.9 billion. If you look at the last biggest crypto agreement, Kraken had one for $1.5 billion when they purchased NinjaTrader. So listening to Bitwise, of course, again, that Matt, of course, is thinking this is a great acquisition, and he now sees a path for Coinbase to become a $1 trillion company in the future. So that's, I mean, I'll stop there with those two big announcements, because those are kind of big deals to see, especially from a traditional finance perspective and what Coinbase is now going to be able to do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to see what Coinbase does, and if they become more serious on the top end, like the top three or four crypto, or if they continue to go down this path of like adding a gazillion different cryptocurrencies and now futures and options based on that, and what they kind of how they handle this. If you look at that, if you get on Coinbase these days, they almost need like a thinkorswim platform, and that's way more complicated than what they offer, because if they're going to do this, they're attracting like really sophisticated traders, right? Options, futures, way down the list of market cap cryptocurrency traders and stuff. I don't know how much money is in that from a Coinbase standpoint. I don't know how many transactions they do. It seems like compared to Bitcoin, it'd be, you know, peanuts. But at the same time, they may be like losing a lot of transaction volume to the ETFs, and they need to go pivot and try to chase other revenue streams. I don't know this. I think it's good for them, because in the United States, you really don't have a lot of options for this stuff. You know, it's pretty limited. And so that it opens up a lot. I mean, they're becoming a giant, you know, and on the ETFs. Yeah, they lose some transaction costs or transaction fees, but they're still the custodian for virtually half of all of the ETF coin. So there's still money coming in. It definitely opens the door for them to be a $1 trillion business. They also got approved to be listed on the S&P 500. So they're going to see a lot of passive income from ETFs and things flow into their stock now. So it's like Coinbase is winning. They're a key man in this whole, crypto Bitcoin operation. I mean, if something bad happens to them, they get hacked or whatever, then, you know, that could be real trouble.
Yeah. So I think that happens on the 19th of May. They're going to replace Discover Financial, who is being acquired by Capital One. I think their stock jumped like 8%. And the expectation is their trading volume should 7X as soon as they get listed on the S&P 500. So That's kind of impressive. Kind of going back to the derivatives piece, I remember when we did our book, one of those images that we used in there talked about the size of the derivatives market compared to everything else. And it is insanely huge. And until you kind of visually see it, it's almost hard to imagine. So I think there is a ton of revenue there. What Coinbase had in the past was a separate place you could go for advanced trading. And I think they're going to have to do that at some point. And maybe this is what that actually acquisition is going to allow them to do, is have another place for people to go, because their one version doesn't grade. If you look at the revenue from last quarter, it was $2 billion, which is down 10% from the previous quarter. The crazy part is their subscription services rose 9%. So they still have a ton of people that are, I guess, buying the Coinbase Prime or Coinbase One subscription service, because that was $700 million in a quarter is what they got there, which is kind of crazy in my opinion. So, I think it's definitely headed on the right path for them. They also were in the news for the unleashing about 10,000 documents from their Freedom of Information Act that they got from multiple agencies, including the SEC. And what's interesting in there is the New York Attorney General's office had some, I guess, asks from the SEC to file a brief in support of the argument that Ether is a security. So, shocker. If you look at all this stuff, we've been talking the past few weeks about how everybody is kind of stopping this war against crypto, except for the New York Attorney General's office. So, kind of crazy that's happening. And at the same time, the mayor of New York City is telling all the crypto companies to come build an empire in New York City. But I don't know why anybody would want to do that with the New York Attorney General's office kind of going after everybody still at the same time.
That was exactly what I was going to say when you brought up the New York Attorney General. Like when Adams said he wants to build a crypto empire and everybody come to New York, I'm like, your taxes are through the roof. You're not corporation friendly, and you're especially not crypto corporation friendly. Like, it's not possible. Why? It would be the last place I would go. You're not attracting talent, right? You could be domiciled in Nebraska. All of these positions are remote. Like, Coinbase doesn't have an office, like a headquarters. So this is, to me, it doesn't make any sense for New York to try to play that game. They got to get their judicial system in line before they do anything. And you see how hard it is to make that turn. Like, once you convince these people that crypto's bad, how long does it take to make them realize that it's not? Crypto being used for nefarious purposes. Okay, let's stop crypto. Drug dealers use iPhones to make deals. Zero attack on iPhones, right? Like, there's a lot of nefarious uses for things that just don't get attacked. So yeah, I think Adams would have a better shot at saying, I wish I could have a crypto empire built in New York City, but here's why I can't. The taxes are crazy. We're not friendly to corporations, and any crypto company that comes to do business in New York gets the hammer dropped on them. So politicians are going back to just being dumb again. Like, I thought we had a crack in the door. We might see some positive news coming out of politics, but it's really, everything is like this. The Strategic Bitcoin Reserve at the federal level, where we have advanced the ball zero in over 2 months on that, including we still have no idea how much Bitcoin is held by any organization within the federal government that we're supposed to see a month ago. It's all talk. It's fine. At least they're talking better than they were 8 months ago.
A quick break from the podcast to talk about a little PDF I put together for everybody. I've been in crypto since about 2018 and made a lot of mistakes. The one thing I always get asked is, what would you do differently if you got in today? So what I've done is created a PDF that talks about the 10 mistakes that I've made and how not to make those mistakes ever again. If you're interested, you can check the link in the show notes or go to www.jasonexplainscrypto.com/10 and get access to that PDF. That's the number 10, not spelled out. Back to the podcast. Well, let's talk about corporations, because there was a ton of news about corporations here in this past week too. And of course, let's start with Strategy. They bought more Bitcoin. I think we went for a week or two without them buying any Bitcoin, and now it's started to turn back on. So another $1.3 billion, just over 13,000 Bitcoin. They now hold over 568,000 Bitcoin, almost 569,000. So this is awesome. I think the total amount of companies that are doing some sort of Bitcoin treasury is close to 70 at this point, right? And we were, what, a third of that beginning of the year and less than that? I forget what the actual number was. So it has grown quite a bit. Metaplanet has bought more, kind of there at that, what, 10% of MicroStrategy. So they bought about 1,200 more Bitcoin. So their total is 6,796 Bitcoin. The interesting piece about that is they now hold more Bitcoin than El Salvador does. So that was kind of a big milestone for them. And then I did see Thumbs Up, which is a media company. A week ago, they held about 19 Bitcoin, which is just under $2 million. Last week, they filed to raise $500 million to buy more Bitcoin. So it is wild. And during all of this, Michael Saylor was doing his Bitcoin for Corporations event, which I haven't really watched nearly as much of it. And I'm sure you've probably watched quite a bit more.
Yeah, so you kind of ran down a couple lines on my notes this week. The thing that I noticed about Metaplanet was they bought 1,200 Bitcoin, and now they have 6,700 Bitcoin. So they basically bumped their Bitcoin stash by 20% in one purchase. So they're starting to see the benefit of doing what Saylor does, which is forget it. This thing works. It works better than running a hotel. It works better than running an internet or an IT business. Let's let it rip. And so that mentality of, hey, I'm gonna buy a little bit of Bitcoin, to I need to buy as much Bitcoin as I can buy, and I'm gonna leverage to do it. You know, that usually takes a long time. Metaplanet did it in like maybe 2 years. I don't know if the Bitcoin for corporations had a lot to do with that or not. But it's very, Michael Saylor lays it out in very simple terms, and very complex terms at the same time. But yeah, explaining what he's doing, the different vehicles that he uses, the different, like, coming out with Strike and Strife for these perpetual, you know, dividend bearing stock that really the funds that go into them lead to buying more Bitcoin for MicroStrategy is you listen to it and you're like, this makes a lot of sense. I should be leveraging assets, like any sort of just stranded assets that you have, like, man, you need to kind of leverage it to get into some Bitcoin positions. And, you know, they put on they're a $100 billion company. They put on a very good presentation. You know, it's like a couple of days long. It's almost as good or as good as like the Bitcoin conference, where you've got the speakers come in, everything is on point. Like, they've got X amount of time. They sit down and talk about their stuff. They run different people up there to talk about different angles of different things, and you know, like similar from Similar Scientifics there. You know, that would be crazy for a corporation to bring in what appears to be a competitor to speak at their conference, right? But I mean, you can see how important it is. They have Michael Saylor. They got their CEO Phong. He spoke a lot. I really like listening to him talk. You know, you could kind of hear what strategy has behind. It's not just Michael Saylor. They brought in the guys that do the YouTube show MicroStrategy True North. And these guys were just guys. That one guy was like an insurance broker dealer kind of guy. He's probably late 20s. And he put together this Bitcoin stuff or the strategy trade early on and really saw the value in it, and started talking to other people about it online and through social media. And then they built like a 5 to 7 guy group. And then every week they go on YouTube and they talk for like 2 or 3 hours. It's like, starts at like 10 o'clock Eastern, so they go to like midnight, and they get tens of thousands of people watching every episode, and it may be 100,000 by now. And so they brought those guys and put them on stage and talked to them. The CEO and Michael Saylor sit down and talk with these normal dudes who just get on YouTube and talk every week. One of those guys now works for Swan. Two more of them got picked up for other Bitcoin treasury companies. And so, you know, it's just interesting to see that. Like, that's pretty novel, right? I don't recall any company doing anything like this. And they actually asked, like, they were on the thing. And one of the regular guys that's on the YouTube channel was like, so whose idea was this? And do you regret it? Or something similar to that. And they were honest about it. They were like, well, you know, we kind of had this idea. And then we pitched to each other. And it was like a no-brainer. It's like, what's the downside? Which you really don't see corporations thinking like that. But it's super interesting to hear them talk. You know, they introduce a lot of new terminology. Strategy has no problem being the first guy to just blaze a trail. You know, they're creating different metrics like Bitcoin torque, right? Like, you have an engineer as the face of your organization from a Bitcoin standpoint. So you come up with something like Bitcoin torque, which basically is like, how much leverage do you get to buy Bitcoin for strategy? How much does going to the ATM get you? How much does Strike get you? How much does Strife get you? What about the convertible notes? So basically, like, ranking those different vehicles that MicroStrategy uses to buy Bitcoin, like which ones are more accretive to the shareholder, which ones, so they basically just created a whole new terminology for figuring out that. And now once you kind of understand what Bitcoin torque is, they talk about it and you're right along with them. I mean, it's pretty freaking smart to watch them operate. And, you know, until they're wrong, they're right. And so far they've been right. So they haven't done, you know, they talk about volatility, like stock price volatility being, you know, the lifeblood of what they do. And I think they saw that going to the ATM was really dampening their volatility and dampening the upside of their stock price. And so I wouldn't be surprised if we see them reduce the veracity that they use the ATM. You know, they did $21 billion in 6 months instead of 3 years. And then I think we'll see them slow that down. Honestly, I think what they'll do more of is use the ATM to pay the dividends that they owe for the Strike and Strife tickers. And that way, that's like the leverage piece, right? They don't decrease the top side of their stock price by going to the ATM, but it's like a leveraged use of that ATM to pay the 8% and 10% for Strike and Strife. So they're, you know, they're getting a 10x leverage on the ATM now. So they're freaking smart, man. These are financial games that nobody's even thought about playing. And then the crazy part about this whole thing was Michael Saylor was saying that he was just sitting down with ChatGPT and prompting it, trying to come up with new ways to generate revenue in order to buy Bitcoin. And so he was going like in these iterative back and forth with ChatGPT. And that's where Strike and Strife came from, was AI. And so he was like, okay. So he basically said he put a binder together or I don't know if it was digital or not, but he basically put it together and sent it to the board and was like, hey, I think this is what we should do. Go through it, figure it out, make sure, you know, I think it works, figure it out, which is the first time I've heard anybody. I mean, it's a pretty big thing to admit that this was basically an AI generated idea that nobody else has really thought of. It's cool stuff, man. If you're not listening to what Strategy's doing, I think you're missing out. And the more I'm going on a bit of a rant with Strategy, but man, at this point, I'm a stockholder. I really like what they're doing. They've got dadgum 568,000 Bitcoin that's just sitting there. Between Saylor and AI, they're going to figure out a way to do something with that Bitcoin to start turning it into some sort of Bitcoin-based business that has operating revenue, because they're too smart not to. And that's got to be the play, right? You don't just buy Bitcoin in that level. I mean, you have such a huge advantage with that much Bitcoin. You can lever up and have even greater advantage. And honestly, they have a fiduciary responsibility to do so to the shareholders. So I'm whatever, man. You know, Tesla's got a lot of upside because they can have automated driving and all these future things that don't exist today, but it's built into their stock price. MicroStrategy got a lot of that stuff too, and it is not built into their stock price.
The other thing that I saw from a corporation perspective was Steak and Shake. They are going to accept Bitcoin nationwide starting on the 16th of May, which is only 3 days away. And it's crazy. I mean, we've talked about some of these other companies that are doing trials here and there. Like Steak and Shake just bypassed the trial and said, screw it, all of our places will accept Bitcoin in about a week. And I mean, they have, I feel like, been in the news a lot here lately, switching all of their fries to beef tallow instead of the other crap they were using. So it's exciting to see. I'm assuming they're going to do this on the Lightning Network. I haven't really seen a lot of the details, but I'm hoping they're going to do it on Lightning instead of having to wait 30, 60, 90 minutes sometimes to get the Bitcoin network to actually finalize everything.
Yeah, it's either got to be through the Lightning Network, or you remember maybe a year or two ago, we talked about Clover, like a payments processing company using Bitcoin rails. And I don't know that we even understood how that worked on the infrastructure side, but there, you know, and Jack Mallers was talking about they're going to use Bitcoin via Bitcoin is going to be at Walmart, things like that, maybe 2 years ago. And so I think that those payment transaction companies have done more work than the merchants have really kind of pulled the trigger on. So I live in a small town. I'm going to walk into Steak and Shake this week and be like, hey, curious about it. This Bitcoin thing, are you guys going to take it and see it? Right. What do I care? Like I don't know who owns our Steak and Shake, but I bet that I am one degree removed from that person. So I'm going to go figure it out, man. It's a cool thing. And I was telling my son about it, and he's like, so we're going to go eat Steak and Shake? I'm like, yeah, we're definitely going to go eat Steak and Shake, man. Like I bought beer with Bitcoin, bought lunch, dinner with Bitcoin, paid for a hotel room with Bitcoin. We'll definitely buy, you know, steak burgers and shakes with Bitcoin. So I'm all about it. There's definitely a Bitcoiner high up at Steak and Shake between the beef tallow stuff and this. And and not only that, it's not, hey, these Steak and Shakes are going to now accept Bitcoin. They said every Steak and Shake's going to accept Bitcoin starting on May 16th. And they announced it like May 8th or something. I mean, it's like a super quick turnaround. So I'm hoping that it's super easy for the employees to implement. But our Steak and Shake has moved to strictly a kiosk-based ordering system. So they might not even have to train their employees. It may just be a button that they put on the kiosk and the customer, it's very totally customer generated. So if that's the case, then you know, you only have to train your employees on how to deal with Bitcoin. You don't have to do anything. You just turn it on. And then you let every Bitcoiner know that they can go eat Steak and Shake when they're on a road trip, and they can pay with their Strike app through Lightning. And guess what they're going to do? If you had a choice between crappy McDonald's and Burger King and paying dollars or supporting a Bitcoin company like Steak and Shake, guess what you're going to do?
It seems to me as somebody high up in Steak and Shake just read the fiat standard not too long ago, because everything in there, they're kind of switching over to the Bitcoin standard, right? So the other thing that was interesting that I saw, the BIS, which is the Bank of International Settlements, they just dropped a report last week too that concluded that Bitcoin use rises when inflation surges, remittances get pricey, and capital controls increase. And there was one guy that pretty much said, in other words, when people need it the most. And so, I mean, that's kind of what's happening around the world right now, is all this stuff is happening and the use case of Bitcoin is making more and more sense. A lot of cases that's outside the US, we just don't see that here yet, unfortunately, but it is continuing to happen everywhere else in the world. And I got a question from somebody the other day saying, well, what's going to happen with regulation? Is the government going to stop the use of Bitcoin? And I was like, no, regulation is needed so that we continue to grow the use case for Bitcoin here. And it's already growing in the rest of the world very quickly. And we're we hold a lot of it, but we just don't use it right now.
Yeah, and you said it, and it was another thing they mentioned in the Bitcoin for Corporations. The people that need Bitcoin find it. Like, if you don't need to do the research and figure it out, like, then you don't do it. Like, it doesn't work for you. Because like the Elizabeth Warrens and the people that are winning the fiat game and all that. Like, yeah, well, why would they need Bitcoin? They don't. But like, some of these companies and MicroStrategy basically pounded corporations of saying, look, you're a zombie. Like, you would be better off putting your treasury in Bitcoin and shutting everything else down, because you're, congratulations on growing at 8% per year. Inflation's 10. You're going backwards. You're losing, you know, you're a zombie. You're dead and you don't know it. And you're just wandering around. And he said, like, the companies that need it find it first. The people that need it find it first, right? I mean, look at the same with stable coins, right? Yeah, stable coins. Does the United States need a stable coin? Not really. But man, a lot of other countries do. And so guess what they found? Stable coins, quick. So to me, I think you'll see more companies jumping into it, because I think that if you, once you realize that you need it, you're like, oh yeah, we definitely need something like this. If you start to compare your company to gold or to Bitcoin or to something other than the dollar or something other than CPI or these fake metrics the government comes up with, like, you realize that you're toast. And once you realize you're toast, you're like, man, we need to do something. We got to fix this. And so the stats on the corporations and how poorly an investment in a corporation is, that most corporations lose to T-bills. it was pretty staggering. And so, yeah, I'm fully agree with, like, people who need it find it. Like, people who are curious find it too. Don't get me wrong. Like, I didn't need Bitcoin 8 years ago, but it was like, man, this is cool. I think other people will need it. I'd like to be involved. And so that's what got me in. But yeah, I think you'll see it. Like, the remittance payments, they need help. And what was it, 8 or 10% of every dollar sent into countries is taken on the transaction from a remittance payment. It's like, that's a lot,
yeah,
for people that need money for basic, you know, food and shelter and things like that. So they need it. They'll find it. And then, you know, some things are bottom up, some things are top down, and Bitcoin seems to work both ways, or Bitcoin seems to be working both ways right now, with the federal government putting things in and, you know, people that need it using it. So yeah, there's a lot of bullishness here.
Yeah. So you mentioned zombie companies, and this may be a good transition into a possible zombie country. I know the UK has been in the news a lot lately because of the tariff discussions with the US. What they, I guess, weren't in the news for very much was their economic secretary of the Treasury coming out and saying that a strategic Bitcoin reserve is not the plan for us. And which is kind of crazy, because we've talked about this in the past, that what else does the UK have if they're not going to get into the financial side? And if they don't think Bitcoin and crypto are the future, what are they betting on? So they're still planning on meeting with the United States to discuss collaboration on digital assets. But if they're not planning on getting involved from a big picture, I'm wondering where they're going to go long term as a country.
No, you're exactly right. The UK needs it. They should be motivated to figure it out, understand it, and develop some economic plan to bring companies and innovation into that island, because they're running out of stuff to do to grow their GDP. So I think it's a mistake. I think the UK, out of everybody, ought to be trying to find ways to get involved in this. So I'm constantly let down by politicians. And if I was in the UK, if I was a citizen of the UK, I'd be ticked off.
Well, somewhere related to that, I mean, you have Ireland, which is, I don't think they're officially part of the UK. I should probably
know. You know, they're like part of, they're not in the UK, but they're in the British something. Like, yeah, it's dumb.
However that works, you have, so Conor McGregor, who a lot of people have known from the UFC, has been getting more into politics, he has actually started pushing Ireland to create a strategic Bitcoin reserve on their end. I think he's been reaching out to Max Kaiser and to Bukele from El Salvador, trying to get a meeting set up. But I think Max Kaiser, he said, you need to take all $114 billion of your sovereign wealth fund and just put it into Bitcoin. And then that guarantees that Ireland will become a very strong country moving forward. So I'm not really sure where things are going to go. I love the concept. I know they're trying to have a meeting. I've been impressed. I've listened to Connor a little bit talk about politics in Ireland and some of the craziness going on. And what's funny is they don't want to let him be a part of politics in Ireland because, of course, he's saying all the right things of what they should be doing, in my opinion. So where this goes, I'm not really sure. But, I mean, it is exciting to see Ireland trying to have conversations about strategic Bitcoin reserves too.
Yeah, you definitely don't want like strong, confident individuals becoming politicians. They might actually do something smart. You know, the consensus is usually pretty weak from as far as those decisions to get made in a group. And so, and that's why you see smaller companies getting into Bitcoin, smaller countries getting into Bitcoin. That's why you see individuals get into Bitcoin, because you don't have a group making a decision, right? Groups have very low courage. And so you don't see that. But then you have individuals that don't care about that, take over, and then you see decisions get made. So I'd be curious to see what happens. I mean, Ireland's got a unique perspective on corporations. You know, they're super tax friendly. So they get a lot of corporations housing there internationally. And so, you know, there's benefits to that. And so I wouldn't be surprised if they're a little more innovative and a little more creative on how to get involved in crypto and in Bitcoin. And I mean, how many times do you have to see this work before you're like, you know what, this would work for me, or this would work for my country? And so, you know, to me, we're past time, right? We're in a $2 trillion market cap. We're not going to zero. So we're going to go up.
Well, the other thing too, not too far away from them, is the EU, right? And we've talked about the EU leading from a regulation perspective against like the US. So we're thinking that the EU is going to kind of take over from a crypto perspective. Well, they just announced their plans to track all crypto transfers under the new anti-money laundering laws. And what's crazy about all this, if you look at Article 7 and 8 of the EU Charter, it guarantees privacy and data protection. Yet they're doing the opposite with on all this tracking everything. So I don't know, it's kind of the same thing we talked about, zombie countries going in the wrong direction. This could mean that the EU's crypto economy is going to shrink, because all these crypto companies that are in the EU are probably going to want to get out of the EU because of the new rules that the EU is trying to put forth. So it'll be interesting to see where things go with that as well.
It's fine with me, as long as the United States changes their tune and actually locks some of this stuff in, because man, you can't just keep picking your company up and moving it from country to country. It's a daggum headache. So, I mean, at this rate, everybody's just going to end up in El Salvador.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the U.S. still has that opportunity to become the crypto capital of the world, but they better do it soon, or else it's going to be Abu Dhabi and things like that that seem to be way more open to a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, the UAE, if I had a company and my country wasn't letting me do business there, it'd be tough to pick a different city other than Dubai to move to. Taxes are great. Like everything's, I've heard nothing but good stuff about like living there. So if you don't do it, these people are going to move, man. I don't think politicians understand how once you get into Bitcoin and you start to build things around it, and then 4 to 8 years later, you're like, locked in. Like you're not going to be able to pry this out of society. It's in there. So you already lost. Now you need to figure out how to win on a global scale. And nobody seems to be competing. It's wild.
So Germany was also in the news here recently too. They just seized about $37 million in crypto from an exchange, EXCH. And apparently facilitated a lot of money laundering from the North Korean hackers that have done all that. I'll be intrigued to see if Germany actually keeps this crypto this time, or if they sell it. I mean, they had a lot more than that, like another zero on top of that. It's, or actually more than zero, three zeros.
50,000 Bitcoin.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. And if they've realized that maybe selling their crypto isn't the best idea, but who knows at this point?
Yeah, we'll see. At this point, man, the politicians, it's like they've given up. So they'll probably sell it.
Yeah. So switching over to South Korea. So their leading presidential candidate is saying he's going to push to allow crypto ETFs, which are currently banned in South Korea. The election's set for the June 3rd. To me, it was almost kind of crazy to think that crypto ETFs are banned in South Korea when South Korea has one of the highest, I feel like, population base of using crypto. They're very technological savvy. And for some reason, that country has not done a crypto ETF yet, which was kind of mind-boggling when I read that. But that would be definitely good to see.
Yeah, well, you know, my view on like the South Korean market is they love to trade. But if you get an ETF, if it's similar to what we see in the United States, retirement funds are going to flow into it. Mm-hmm. You know, companies can use it. So they become more of a buy and hold if the ETF gets approved, which it's a good thing for Bitcoin. So it's a good thing for, I support it.
And then we talked about World, Sam Altman's project, I think last week. Kenya just ordered that project to delete all their locally collected biometrics within 7 days. So once again, another country saying, stay out. We don't like what you're doing.
Well, that's smart. I can't believe that thing still has legs.
I can't believe it's taken off in the US right now. That's even scarier. So Bitcoin Conference 2025, we haven't really talked too much about that, but they did just announce JD Vance will be one of the main speakers. This will be the first time ever that a vice president that's in office is going to be on the stage supporting Bitcoin. So I'm intrigued to see where that presentation goes and where JD Vance takes it. But I've started to enjoy more of his perspective on things. So I'll be intrigued to see what he says there.
Yeah, I mean, if you listen to him talk, he does a good job of talking about complicated things or tricky things. And my politics are pretty ambivalent, but there's some politicians I can't listen to. I can listen to JD Vance talk. And honestly, you talk about the Bitcoin conference, we're like 2 weeks away. Bitcoin's at $100,000 a Bitcoin. The conference is 2 weeks away. Nobody's really talking about Bitcoin. I mean, you know, it's almost like there's a lot of energy here, but nobody's talking about it. So maybe, you know, the Bitcoin conference has a tendency to have some kind of news, you know, headline making announcement. So maybe they'll give us something, because it's wild. I mean, I'm enjoying where we're at right here, but it's like everybody's bored with $100,000 Bitcoin. We basically just got here, but nobody's talking about it. I haven't even looked to see. Yeah, I'm not seeing it on my X feed of all the different speakers. I'll be here, I'll be there. You know, people are just kind of downplaying it. And I mean, you know, last year they had Trump talk. So guess what? You're probably not going to beat that. But, you know, this year you could actually have people talk that mean something and do something. So I like listening to that stuff. I think they do a great job of putting that on live on YouTube. So as you're kind of working around the house or getting things done or, you know, whatever, driving, you can listen to it. There's some really good stuff there. I'm not going to go, but I could see myself going to one of these conferences in the future. But no, it's super weird to me that the only thing I'm hearing more of is technical analysis from traders online and on social media are talking about, you know, we've got this signal or that. And like, I haven't heard that in a while, but they come out of the woodwork when price goes up. They start, oh, look, I was right a month ago when I said this. And all you do is hear them a month later say they said it a month earlier. So that's the only thing that kind of tells me we're in a bull market right now.
Yeah, it was interesting. So CZ has been in the news a little bit lately too, and his prediction was that the total crypto market was going to go to $5 trillion in 2025, and that Bitcoin was going to hit somewhere between $500,000 and possibly $1 million this cycle, which to me, those numbers don't add up. So if Bitcoin hits $500,000, it's like a $10 trillion market alone, market cap, right? So,
yep.
Yeah, so there's something not correct there, but while that would be great, I'm not sure that's going to happen by the end of the year at this point.
Yeah, I mean, things are moving kind of slow, but you know, Bitcoin, man, you give it 12 weeks, freaking doubles, triples, you know, it could go nuts. So, you know, we got time. Like I said, there's usually like some kind of catalyst and things go nuts. It is on my radar that the Bitcoin dominance chart is like picking up steam, and Bitcoin's share of the total crypto market cap is kind of back to like 70%, which is kind of over the top. But you know, the rally hasn't really included altcoins like it has in the past. But I mean, we'll see, man. I mean, you have a blow off top and then everything crashes and that money finds its way into altcoins. Maybe we see it, maybe we don't.
Well, it was interesting. The CEO of Bitwise, Hunter Hosley, mentioned that 165,000 new Bitcoin will be mined this year. In Q1 alone, the public companies bought 95,000 Bitcoin just in the first quarter. So then that's just the public companies. That doesn't include governments. That doesn't include private companies. That doesn't include retail. So at some point, there is going to be a huge supply shock. I'm amazed that hasn't happened yet, but something is going to change for sure.
I concur. I like seeing people buy Bitcoin, knowing they're not going to sell it, and knowing that they're buying it from people that have just been buying and selling Bitcoin and making trades and trying to make US dollars that way. Over time, as people and corporations and countries squirrel this stuff away, you're just not going to find easy to buy Bitcoin anymore. And I don't know. We'll see what happens, but the price has got to go up if people aren't willing to sell their Bitcoin. And like Michael Saylor talks about, all your models will be broken. Like once all the easy to buy Bitcoin disappears and gets put in corporate reserves, I think that's when your models break and everything breaks to the upside. So I don't know when that is, right? Maybe 20 years from now. I don't know, but it's getting closer because there's a lot of organizations and people buying Bitcoin that isn't going to be up for sale anytime soon. And definitely not at these prices.
And a lot of dry powder on the sidelines that is looking of getting in soon too, which is kind of crazy.
Correct. Yeah. And more liquidity coming.
Yeah. So American Bitcoin, which is a subsidiary of Hut 8 and American Data Centers, which is the company owned by the Trump sons, they are also going to be merging with Griffon Digital Mining and go public. So I did see that, which is kind of interesting. Once again, Trump and crypto, you're seeing a lot of interaction there, definitely causing a lot of problems with the stablecoin stuff that we talked about earlier. But I mean, it's smart. They got debanked back in the day, so they are kind of all in into the Bitcoin side of things and saying, screw the banking industry.
Yep. And so they're going to go public and they're going to have Bitcoin in the balance sheet. Jack Mallers is going to be the CEO of 21, which is going public, and he'll have Bitcoin in the balance sheet with Cantor Fitzgerald's horsepower behind it. Strive, which is Vivek Ramaswamy's investment company, they're entering the Bitcoin treasury company race. I mean, like, it's picking up steam. And I think if you're not really paying attention, you have no idea.
Yeah. So what we haven't really talked much is kind of the RWA side of things. And so Superstate, which is the tokenization startup, they just announced a platform called Opening Bell. And what it allows companies to do is natively issue their shares on chain, which is pretty much a very notable innovation for tokenized public equity companies. And the first company that is going to be the participant on that platform is going to be Sol Strategies, which is that, I'll call it the MicroStrategy of Solana right now. Leo Wald has been doing some pretty amazing things with them. And that will be really intriguing to see if all of a sudden all these companies start becoming not only Bitcoin treasury companies, but also tokenizing their shares onto some sort of platform that can be traded 24/7, 365. So really exciting to see. I know it's just a baby step, but we need baby steps like this to happen for more and more of this to kind of come over into the real world.
Yeah, I'll be interested to keep an eye on that because, like, you know, to me, that's the real world asset piece that's the easiest to do, which is like tokenizing securities. So if I owe you $1,000 for, you know, a share of a vacation or something, and I'm just like, what do you want? You want $1,000 worth of Disney stock or $1,000 worth of Bitcoin or $1,000? Like, you know, you pick and choose because it just makes sense to me. Like, it probably doesn't make sense to a lot of other people. But once you start realizing like, oh, you should be able to shift assets around easier than we do, then this sort of thing kind of opens that door.
Well, it makes everything decentralized. I mean, right now, for that to happen, you have to go through a third party and they have to give you permission and you have to do it when they're open. And I think that's what Caroline Crenshaw, one of the, I guess, five SEC commissioners, which I don't even know if there's officially five right now, but she has been pushing back. She's the only Democrat that's there right now and saying that the system we have works great. It's helpful for it to take 3+ days for anything to finalize because then we can catch any fraud that's happening. And if you have it somewhat finalizing almost immediately, then that's a problem. And Hester kind of came out and said that maybe she has something that's right, that we don't need it to finalize immediately, but within a few hours or something, we can still utilize tokenization in the blockchain to make this a lot easier and a lot faster and a lot cheaper. But maybe it's a some sort of time that it takes to vet out and make sure that somebody's not doing something mischievous.
Right. And it's the same thing. If you don't think you need it, then you're not going to even bother trying to understand it. Like, oh, the current system's fine. Not only that, the current system, when you buy stock, when I log into my Schwab account and I buy stock, I don't have that stock. Schwab just tells me that they've allocated some of their stock to me. So if you have real world assets, you actually own it. Like it's yours. They can't play games with it. And so to me, you don't think you need it, but there's no scarcity. So now that Bitcoin ETF stuff's involved, if you're Schwab and you think you've got the shares and you think you're allocating to them, like you actually have to do it because the ETFs are bound to have the Bitcoin. And they could run this old system into Bitcoin and it just not work the way they thought it would. So, and you know, until they need it, they're not going to spend the time to do the research.
Yeah. Well, what else did I miss this week?
The only thing I've got left on my notes is I am looking for a little more cash flow, right? So just inflation this and I'm sitting on Bitcoin. That's not doing much. I've got a lot of real estate that's paid for. That's doing what it's supposed to do, but I've got a lot of equity that sits. And so I just called up my Schwab person and was running some stuff by him. And I was using Grok AI to figure out like, hey, is this a bad financial decision to do what I'm doing? And it's like, yeah, you know, it's like it's super conservative to be 7% leveraged on a real estate portfolio. And anyway, so I ended up talking to Schwab and about opening an account for the real estate business so that I could honestly get into MicroStrategy and MSTY and generate some revenue on some cash that's sitting. And I've considered refinancing one of the properties just to cash out. And then, you know, between covered call strategies and things like that, it's easy to beat. I don't know that I need to. I'm pretty heavy on Bitcoin as it is. If Bitcoin goes up, I'm fine. But if Bitcoin goes down, I'm toast. So anyway, I talked to this one guy at Schwab about what I needed to do. And okay, thanks, bye, click. Hour later, another guy at Schwab calls me up and starts to kind of pitch me on everything. And I was like, look, are you looking at my account? Because like, heads up, financial advisors don't like what I do with this account, right? Like I'm way out of whack. It's almost all Bitcoin or Bitcoin proxy. And he was like, yeah, he's like, you know, Schwab's actually working on adding a crypto exchange with futures. So 24/7, you can trade this stuff and da 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 along, you know, on your brokerage account, this and that. And I'm like, man, we talked about SAB 121, where if you have your checking account and your savings account in dollars, and then you have a savings account in Bitcoin and it's at zero, you're probably more apt to move money in there and buy some Bitcoin and get it off of zero. Even more so when you look at it, if you log into your brokerage account and you see a Bitcoin stash at zero. So it's just interesting to have that conversation with Schwab. You know, Edward Jones and Merrill Lynch and people like that still don't let you touch a lot of the Bitcoin stuff. So if you're looking at an advantage, like Schwab has a need for this, right? They're in a competitive environment. Like Robinhood, I think, is starting to really eat a lot of people's lunch in the brokerage world. And so, you know, they have a need to figure that stuff out. So this guy, traditional finance guy, Schwab, Charles Schwab, old, you know, investment house, never gave me a hard time for a second about Bitcoin. Nothing. I told him, I was like, well, I closed two retirement accounts because they wouldn't let me get into the Bitcoin ETFs. And that's why you have it. That's like, you know, like, heads up, there's real money flowing your way. So, you know, it's always interesting to have these like real world touch points with Bitcoin or crypto. I like to throw them in here during the week because they seem to happen a lot, especially during bull markets. But I don't know, it's kind of interesting for him to kind of volunteer some of that information, especially since we were kind of talking about old school stuff, refinancing rental properties to generate yield on, you know, other stuff. So anyway, that was the last piece of notes I had. We went through a lot this week.
Yeah, I did have a conversation with my 7-year-old and somehow inflation came up, and you don't usually talk about inflation with a 7-year-old, but we started talking more about it, and I kind of explained that's the benefit of Bitcoin in that you can't have a government just print money forever. So you're only going to be limited to 21 million Bitcoin ever. And he just, his eyes got huge and he goes, I need to go buy another Bitcoin.
I was like, well, exactly.
Yeah. I was like, well, I'm glad you got that. I was like, I don't know if you're going to buy a whole Bitcoin. I don't know where you're getting that kind of money right now, but you can buy more Bitcoin. Yes. So they bought some more Bitcoin in their savings deposit, their savings account last week too. So that was exciting to see.
Yeah, no, that's good. My 12-year-old. So when he was 8 or 9, he goes to Home Depot with me. They have these gourmet lollipops at Home Depot that were 49 cents a piece when he was 8 or 9. And now they're 99 cents or $1.09 sometimes. And I'm like, hey, man, you've been eating these. Like when we go to Home Depot, we grab one on Saturdays or whatever. I was like, they're double the price that they were like in your lifetime. You know, it took me a long time to be alive and notice a price double. Yeah. And he's 12. So it's pretty, our kids are going to understand inflation way better than we do. Like I was born in 81. Inflation in my lifetime has been not a problem all the way up until really 2020. And then they cranked up that money printer and it's wreaked havoc on everything. So, you know, I think there's a whole generation or multiple generations of people that haven't felt inflation. They don't know they need Bitcoin. It hasn't been explained to them by somebody, and they're going to figure it out one way or another. And when they do, that's when more Bitcoin comes off of the exchanges and less is available for sale, and then price has to go up. So, yeah. A lot of people need Bitcoin, whether they realize it or not.
Yeah, I think it's a great place to end it at. So it's been a long podcast from compared to usual. So looking forward to seeing what happens next week and if it continues to be as much positive news as we had this week.
Yeah, no, I feel like it's prime Bitcoin time right now.
Yep. All right. Chat later, Hal. Thanks.
Thanks, Jason.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.